You're listening to Am I the Bowlcast, the only Magic the Gathering podcast in existence for real. I'm not even kidding. No jokes aside over here. Just playing. We're one of many. My name is Mike Carozza. I'm your host. You might know me as a stand-up comedian and the author behind Am I the Bowlest Column? Am I the Bowlest Column?
Not the column.
And as always, my co-host and super producer, Morgan Sanchez, is here with me. Hey, Morgan.
How's it going, Mr. Colum?
Don't you dare.
The Colum. I mean, maybe depending on your accent, it might be Colum. So like maybe that's what Jake says, your editor.
Yeah, yeah.
Australia's it might be the got Colum. Yeah.
Nah, so I think
we want to be sure to be inclusive with that.
I feel like we're universally agreed on caw. Like for Colum, mm-hmm. You know, it's an awe.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, maybe we get closer in New York if they go like the way they go coffee, they go Colum, and that's closer to Colum.
Like hey, the deli style Colum is Colum.
Anyway, beautiful. This is Am I the Bowlcast. We're back, baby. It's time to, oh boy, it's been a hell of a year and it's been like 5 minutes. But that said, lots going on in the real world. We're here to talk about a fantasy game. I'm trying so hard. It's a mess out there. Before we get too deep, I want to say you'll see me in Chicago. You'll be able to see Morgan in Chicago. I will be in town February 19th to the 23rd. I'll be doing shows from the 19th to the 22nd. Most of them at the Lincoln Lodge. Wednesday night, the 19th, I'll be at Comedians You Should Know. And then Thursday through Saturday, I'm on at the Lincoln Lodge, different shows. You can message me for more details. But more importantly than the stand-up is that I will be at MagicCon Chicago, baby. I will, I've got a meet and greet Sunday morning at 10:30 with who else but Morgan Sanchez joining to be part of the Am I the Bowlcast? Friggin' meet and greet, ready to say hey and hang out with anybody who wants to come party. I know it's early in the morning, but if you're already coming down to sling some spells, make sure you come say hi. That would mean a lot to us.
And we'll have really stickers to hand out.
We got hella stickers, baby, and they're good. They're beautiful. It's our logo on a sticker, and you can signal to everybody that you've been putting some consideration into whether or not you're the villain. Which means you might be a fun person to play against because you are considering your impact on others. Wink, wink, look at that. We're signaling to other people that we're willing to play a game that we take them into account. That's very nice.
And to be nice. Cool. You got
to
be nice.
And to be nice. Very nice. As you might be able to tell, it is a crazy hours right now. I am loopy, scoopy, and I blame a little website called cardsphere.com. Because I was up late last night just going through a bunch of different cards I want. And Cardsphere is our sponsor. I know you're probably like, Mikey, you shill. How dare you organically bring up your relationship with your sponsor? But I'm telling you, this literally happened. I placed an order last night. Finally, I pulled the trigger on a foil skull clamp. For Lizolda the Blood Witch.
Beautiful. And this is a beautiful sentence that, like, can you say it again?
I finally pulled the trigger on a foil skull clamp for Lizolda the Blood Witch. My big bling deck that I don't travel with. The deck that I am afraid to lose. I can't do it. I'm so paranoid. I don't want to lose or ruin the deck. I'm so paranoid. If you want to see me play Lizolda, I'll play it online, or if you come visit Montreal, we'll play it there, or if I'm driving somewhere, maybe that'll happen, but my god, the skull clamp is skull clamp in the deck, take out the inner sleeve, that's right, it's a double sleeve deck, it's my only one, and then you pop the new foil one right where it belongs, and you give it a little kiss before you pop it in, because obviously, you want to show that skull clamp, you love it. So I pulled the trigger on a skull clamp, but there was a minimum for shipping. So I was like, ooh, what else does this guy have? And homie's got, I mean, I say he's got, but now I got, because it's on the way, the foil secret lair version of Linvala, Keeper of Silence, which is masterfully painted. Just an unbelievably beautiful piece by Elena Danner, who I'm a big fan of her work. have the Nykthos Shrine to Nyx on my wall right behind me. Really, really love what she's done with Linvala. And I'm going to be popping her into my legendary only goad deck.
That looks beautiful. I'm just looking at her art and I'm like, this, I'm going to church for this gal. Like, you see angel like that, like that take me straight to church looking at her.
Take me to church, baby. I'm ready. And you know, I before I spotted Linvala, I had added a constellation foil version of Phoenix, God of Deception, for my the Master Transcendent deck, and then I just felt so bad that I didn't want to leave that behind. So I was like, well, get in here, buddy. So I bought those three cards. They are on the way. I am jonesing. I'm so excited about these three. It was that perfect hit of dopamine after spending a lot of the day going, is this man really going to ruin the country unopposed? And you don't even know which man I'm talking about because there's multiple. There's a lot of them. They're ruining the country I don't even live in.
So there is a common denominator with all of this. So I'm sure you can kind of figure it out at least in a 50-50 sense. But
yeah, you can figure it out. They're prominent people out there doing things that hurt many people without any regard for their livelihoods. That said, I put in this order and I was like, who, baby? Now I can go to sleep at 3:30 a.m.
The dopamine rush of Cardsphere is very, very real. My Cardsphere story for the week
is... You have an update?
Yes. Yeah. My partner Dakota and I went to a Cube event in Milwaukee at a shop called The Mana Vault. And one of their employees there, Kevin, we just happened to talk about the fact that he uses Cardsphere like pretty frequently. And I said, you know, here's my username. I'm Amber Spyglass on Cardsphere. You know, I want a ton of stuff. Guys, I want a ton of random stuff, like so foil stuff, like treatment. There's so many cards that I want and that I'm like grossly overpaying for. It's like kind of disgusting. So, I mean, if you're like, damn, this bish wants like, you know, $40 for this $10 card. It's like, yes, I want it. Like, send it to me. It's that simple. Very easy transactional thing. So Kevin goes through my wants and I come to see like, oh, I'm getting gotten an extended art Hazel's Brewmaster for my squirrel deck. Dude. That's about as blinged out, I think, as I can make it, because I don't think there's a foil of this card because it's a commander only, maybe, but
maybe
any foil out. Squirrels and that kind of thing. So I was really happy that we were able to be like, oh, you're on Cardsphere, like send me some cards, and then, you know, sent me a card.
You had one ready. Hell yeah.
Yeah. And a squirrel, especially because in Chicago, I'm very basic. I'm trying desperately to reinvigorate and by reinvigorate, I say like completely start from scratch and make an Alloro deck and a Shroom deck. I'm an Esper girly. Wow, so those are the only colors that I ever like really give a crap about. And I was thinking like, well, maybe I can make like a silly little dorky Alloro deck, like from my past age of Commander in 2013, 1,000 years ago. But then I can make like a really like kind of gross competitive Shroom deck at some point. But, you know, I don't have an infinite money glitch just yet, so we can't do it. But all of that stuff will be coming up on Cardsphere. I'll be wanting, you know, the most bougie of all of the cards for that deck. So stay tuned for that. I'm getting the budget in line and the kidney.
You're going back in time with that one.
Donation. And it's funny because like, I thought about it and I'm like, I'm just such a like weird boomer with it. And I love these new commanders, but I'm just like, my brain is just keeps Alloro. Like he's my boo. That was daddy to me for a very long time.
Damn, and, daddy.
Like,
still, okay.
Like, look at him. Like I implore anyone to look at the art of Alloro and not tell me like, that's just a bad MF-er. Yeah. Like, if you don't think that every time you look at him, I don't know. I don't know if you're looking at the right picture, but the same thing for Shroom, right? Think of the Shroom, the From the Vault art. I'm not entirely, I think that was Mark Zug. Don't quote me on that. The From the Vault Shroom.
I'm looking it up. I got
baddie.
You.
Baddie. Just complete baddie. Okay. Like, and that's the only art of her like that. Like, I don't think that's been
Todd
printed.
Todd Lockwood.
Okay. It's Todd Lockwood. So another like, older school magic artist is brilliant. Yes. And so that's the only art of her. I don't particularly like
that's correct.
The original Alara art for her. Still a queen, still a baddie, still just a brilliant card.
Izzy
that,
goodness. Yeah.
You know, you can do a lot with. But Mike, you got your From the Vault Skull Clamp. So we're treatment
hell
girlies.
Yeah, dude.
We love a treatment. Little foil. We love a little treatment.
Yeah, I do love a little. I'm like I said, foiled. Lizolda's my foiled out deck. That's the one that I'm really like.
queen.
Going for, and I had to get the foil Phoenix and Lavala too. Like, I love a foil. I like it. I like the shiny. I was just gifted a Ripple Foil Horizon of Progress. And
shut up.
I did not know what the Ripple Foil was. This is the first Ripple Foil card I think I've gotten. I put my phone's flashlight on there, and I was like, oh, it's like it's moving.
I think,
oh boy,
the Modern Horizons Commander decks, which is, yes, a real sentence and a real product, if you were not aware, the Modern Horizons 3, I should say, the Modern Horizons 3 Commander decks, the special edition ones I ordered, and they are all Ripple Foil, like the whole deck.
Yeah, dude.
And I mean, dude, you get that in the LGS, like, and like, you cannot see what she says. Like, you can't, I'm like... or, you know, thinking like I was playing with the cast guys in Baltimore a couple months ago with those decks for the first time. Like, oh, yeah, this is so cool. And then I just immediately put a card down and I'm like literally just squinting and like looking up like, OK, wait, what Grist is what's the second ability for Grist there? And like Dana's looking at it like, what does that say? And I mean, so maybe don't do the whole deck Ripple Foil, I think, is the lesson in that. Like, you might think it's cute and it does look really cool, but don't do it.
Or make sure your lighting isn't so harsh.
Yeah, you need to bring your own like a selfie lamp or whatever, like a special camera situation. Like, you have to go all out if you're being like that. But I'm really looking forward to the finish line promo, or not promos, but the treatment for Aether Drift.
The finish line, which one is that? Is that the one where they have like the alt art, or is it the yellowy gold?
It's the yellow, like, I think, okay. I don't know if they were like those. I need to see. I need to have that in my hands. Like,
I need to see them I need to see them in person before I make a call on them, because
I'll make a call right now. I don't even care.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll do it. I want it.
I mean, I'm going to say, for me, it's not, it doesn't look like it'd be for me. Like, I think that it's so much yellow. But again, that's just at first blush, right? I do love that. Like, I love some of the full art stuff. It's really cool. Like for instance, like if you look at Salvation Engine's full art, alt art, basically the versions, you've got the anime one by let me see if I can get the name. Mai Minamura, that looks really colorful and cool and looks like it'd be great shiny. But then you've got like Adam Volker's alt art version of it that's very colorful and stylistically just bold, and I really like that. Like, and then you also look at the base version and you're like, this is still pretty cool. But I am an alt, I do love an alt treatment when it speaks to me. Like the secret layer for Aether Drift, the one that's like arcade cabinets, you'd think that, like, I think the execution is just wrong for me. It's not been it, like, okay. it just did not work for me at all. But I am shocked at how many of the alt art treatments I'm enjoying from Aether Drift's set, because even the Gear Hulks have vastly different treatments in their alt arts. Like Colstoke Gear Hulk is the Rakdos one, which obviously is my favorite. Riptide Gear Hulk is more powerful, but it is not my favorite. It's so good though. But Colstoke Gear Hulk is a beautiful piece of art, but it looks like it's on like graffiti on bricks, and that kind of like that to me like doesn't hit. Meanwhile, the I think it was like Oil Deep Gear Hulk that has the God, I gotta look at this one more time. Yeah, Oil Deep Gear Hulk's alternate treatment with like the pinks and the purples is just so gorgeous that like even a card that I will likely never play in Commander is just so sick. And I'm just like, how do I justify this to myself when it's like, hey, a $25 card.
Just do it.
You know, it's like, I have this binder going where like I ordered a foil cartographer from the Donato Giancola one from the Odyssey block. And like, that's just going in a binder because I like pretty things. And I have a feeling that Oil Deep Gearhawk is also going to jump in there. I'm not sold on the yellowy like finish line promos.
See, I love you anything like ostentatious it. Like that. Like, I'm immediately, I'm honestly surprised it
You're
took this long
you are.
For Wizards to like start doing these, basically, because like you think about like the before times and you're like, so you'd have what? Like foil and non-foil. And everybody hates the foils except for me and like three other people.
I love the foils.
But now it's like, okay, so let's give people more options and then maybe that's like going to be a good thing. Everybody hates like the treatments except for like some of the secret layers and stuff, right? It's like the general idea of that there. But I think it's like, I think it's exciting because especially for Commander players, when you're making like a bunch of different decks that maybe have like the same cards, you can get different treatments for each deck and kind of, we love an aesthetic. So, even if the deck is not like fully foil or my partner has a entirely borderless Kenrith deck. So, I mean, it looks really good. Like every time you pick those cards up, you're like, damn, like these all match. Like it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
It's the same thing like foils scratches or you have itch. Like maybe, you know, not just foils, but like certain treatments, like not every card has every treatment, but like my Urza deck, for instance, is all retro. So that has to be like retro foil basics, retro foil. Like if it doesn't have a retro printing, much less retro foil, it can't go in the deck. And that just goes into like fun, like deck building restrictions, right? Like you can say like, okay, if it doesn't have this kind of printing, can't put it in the deck kind of thing. So
fair.
So it makes it fun.
I do like the one other treatment in Aetherdrift that I really like besides like the alternate art, like they have different kinds of styles, right? Which is like the super colorful speed racery type thing. That's like
the Rat Fink one is sick.
They call that one revved up, right?
Yeah.
That's stuff like The Last Ride got the revved up and like
Apocalypse the Dragula. Runner.
They've got a bunch of them in like uncommon and rares that have it. But then you have the Rude Riders, which looks like skateboard art. Those ones I'm full in. Those reminds me, that made me feel like, yo, they should have tapped Gold Sabertooth for some of these. Like Gold Saber would have knocked one of these out of the park if they ever revisit this thing. I really shout out to Tim. Like he's so good. And I guess the Graffiti Giants, oh, it makes sense. They are graffiti. Coalstoke Gearhulk, I guess you see the bricks a little bit more than the other ones. That makes a lot more sense.
It's cool, like little Easter egg too that you just find out. Like I love that. With the art,
I'll say the art in this set goes hard as hell. This set is so cool. There's a lot going on, and I'm really excited to get my hands on these cards. Because if not for their functionality, they are at least super cool looking, and that to me counts for a lot.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. All right. Well, I like that place to get started on a call. What do you think, Morgan? Should we take it?
We forget the phone exists. And then it appears. Yeah, well, it's like magic.
That's concerning for me because you run the phone. I think we gotta not forget. Okay, we gotta answer this. We'll be right back. It's time to get on this call, baby. Let's do it. Caller on the line. Who's calling into the Bowlcast? Who do we got today?
Hey, the name's Spencer Crittenden, longtime listener, first time caller. How's it going?
I'm great. Nice to hear from you, Spencer. It's been a very, very long time. How have you been?
Yeah. So we met at a Harmontown in Montreal. Is that correct?
That's right. Montreal Just for Laughs Festival back in, I'm trying to Google it, but I can't find it. I want to say it was 2015.
Yeah,
I want to say that's got to be it. I spent so much time that week with Jeff. Mm-hmm. He was having a time. Jeff was loving Montreal.
Yeah,
and I think that was also the Harmontown happened in the room just below the hotel bar, and Dan invited everybody to the bar, and so all of a sudden this place had a 4 p.m. rush they didn't expect. Mm-hmm. And it was packed. Everybody just wanted to hang out. Harmontown, what a special environment.
Yeah.
So sweet.
It was a great time. And, you know, Jeff is always having a time. Anywhere he goes, he is just like a moving party or something. He's a man of mystery. I don't know how he does it. Probably alcohol, if I had to guess. Yeah.
That's so funny, man. It's been a very long time. I'm very happy to see you. I was just talking to you about how you look different. You look I was not expecting this new look. You got a haircut. You told me your glasses are gone. You just lost them. So it's a big different look for you.
I've gone through some changes, and if you've seen Harmon Quest, which is a show that I did, I have a cartoon character version of me, and I look like a different guy entirely. I just look like someone else instead of my cartoon avatar. I like it. I mean, you know, I don't know. I think I look okay, right?
Yeah, you do. You look great, man. You look great. It's fun to see you popping up here and there, because I remember, God, I watched a Brooklyn Nine-Nine episode, and I was like, that's Spencer right there. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like Harmon Quest, that's been, what was that, 2017 or something?
I think so.
Did you also do that series with Dan?
Great Minds.
That's it. One where you would meet with like different historical figures kind of thing. Is that the one?
The premise was I was just a scientist that Dan hired to invent a time machine. But the time machine basically created quick clones of people from the past. And that's so they'd be melted out of goo. And then at some point they'd explode. But he had to interview them for the History Channel before that happened.
It's so funny. I remember the one I watched, I think, had Ron Funches as Idi Amin, of all people.
Yeah.
That's an absolute bananas episode.
Yeah. That show was so fun because we basically made everything up on the shooting day every time. And so, like, anything I was doing that was funny, I probably made it up, like, 5 minutes ago.
That's so great.
Yeah.
That also does speak to the fact that, like, I mean, because your history with, you know, film and television and getting into it and working with Dan Harmon on Community and working on Great Minds and all that. You showed up to Harmontown and you're a DM. You ended up DMing your longtime Dungeons and Dragons guy. And I mean, like it or not, that's improv, baby. You gotta, you know that? Like, we can't boil it all down to just calling it improv, but D&D, that's improv, baby. So I know you gotta trust the gut 5 minutes going into a thing like that.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And yeah, I think D&D was a big part of being able to just go, okay, what are the rules? Who are the characters? Okay, let's try and make it work, you know?
That rules.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, our listeners might know you from a couple episodes of Commander at Home, where you played Commander on stream. And I mean, I never knew you as a Magic player until just recently. Just like, we did talk about Magic back at the Harmontown in Montreal, because I think you'd mentioned it offhand, and I was like, I know you said you play Magic. I'm around. I got decks or something. You were like, I got zero time. That's just like, I'm in and out.
I'm sorry.
It's really not a problem. It happens all the time. It's like, you know, people are in town for a sec, but it's not like that. But it's, it was just like, I know you played Magic, but I never knew you were someone that was like, I'm doing more Commander now. I'm bigger into Commander. So have you been enjoying how Commander's been lately? Have you been playing a lot more? What are your thoughts on Commander right now?
So I feel like I played more dual commander than other types, and playing four player commander is like faster, maybe not faster, but I feel like it's heavier hitting. Whereas, like, I don't know, my decks are really dirtily and nonsensical, and I think they can survive more easily in dual commander than, you know, with multiple players kind of hitting your stuff. But mostly just my decks are bad, I think. So
Give us an example. What are you rocking with right now? Who's a commander that comes to mind when you say that?
So the one that I've done most recently this is a mess. I really need to tune it. But I got into Terra recently because of Flubs the Fool. I got that Build-A-Box or whatever. Not Build-A-Box, but Bio-Boost.
Bio-Box.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, you know, I realized that 100-card commander deck, a tarot deck has 78 cards. It has 56 normal cards and 22 major arcana cards. Now, the 56 cards got reduced into the 52 card normal playing card deck, you know, the four suits and stuff. And then the major arcana are like death, the tower, you know, moon card. And so the
highlights, the big headliners,
the cool ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I realized that in tarot, sometimes there's the upright cards or sometimes they're reversed, you know, and the reversed is like bad or whatever. I realized if you take the 56, you add the 22, and you do reversed of 22, that gets you 100. And so I could do a tarot deck or a commander deck where every card has a one-to-one analog with actual tarot card. And so when I had that idea, I started making spreadsheets and being like, this card is that card's this. And so it's very flavorful, but as a result, it's just, it doesn't work. Like, it doesn't function.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing is, like, man, I love this idea. And you know what? It's funny that this is coming up. The only other time I've ever seen a spreadsheet for like analog this is that is somebody made a Rick and Morty deck.
Yeah.
Where like every card had the analog from the show and they had things proxied or like reskinned to match it. And I think it worked better because they went the other way with it. I think they were just like, you know, oh, Void Slime sounds like something that could work in Rick and Morty. So there's my counterspell. Yeah. Versus this, I have no idea how you do it with lands. Oh my God. Like, you got to look up your land art. You got to,
yeah.
How many colors are you doing? Which card is the headliner? Which card does that correspond to? I think it's a beautiful idea. I think it's so much fun. But thanks. I don't know how the functionality would work of it. But I think this is the fun part about Commander. The creativity that gets expressed in it. It's beautiful. It really
exactly.
is.
Yeah, no, that's what I was so excited about. And I like that, too. I also wanted to make... There's this anime called Gurren Lagann. It's it's a mecha anime with robots. And I wanted to make a mecha Commander deck reskinned like that. So it's all, anime vehicle? Art from that stuff and different... titles and names, but I really think if once I get a good deck list together for the tarot deck, I think I could try and get alters or custom proxies or whatever. Nice. You know, and totally, because then you don't have to remember anything, then it's just going to be on the card, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The cool thing is you could actually do a tarot reading with the deck, like you could do it, and I feel like I don't know. I love talking about Yu-Gi-Oh and stuff. Are you familiar with Yu-Gi-Oh at all?
I'm familiar with it in the sense that I know it exists, and I know a couple of the headliners, like the Dark Magician, the Blue Eyes White Dragon, Exodia, and all his parts. But no, I don't know anything beyond, trap cards and Pot of
Trap
Greed.
Cards. You've activated my trap cards. Well, the exactly. relevant thing is really the show, where it has a lot of people throwing down because they've disrespected one another. And so how you handle that is by playing cards. And you get these characters that go like, you've activated my trap card, and I cast Obliterate and stuff. And they get really into it, and they're these arch characters. And I want to just be like, I'm the tarot guy, you know, let's see what the cards have in store for you. Oh, I flipped over the moon reversed. You know what that means? Bad dreams are in your future. You know, just really go balls to the wall and then just
that's
get stomped.
So funny.
Yeah, it could be a lot
that's
of fun.
So funny. Who cares if you get stomped? You're making this such a fun time. That's okay. This is great. This is, first of all, I gotta see the spreadsheet. Yeah. That's number one. When you have it handy, please send it my way. I need to see what you're working with. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll have some thoughts maybe that I can help with.
Yeah.
But my God, definitely. That's so funny. Also, this idea of being this archetypal player from an anime, mm-hmm. it reminds me of, like, you know, you're playing Pokemon, you bump into somebody, and they're dressed like their favorite Pokemon type.
Yeah.
And they're
yeah.
like, hey, I'm a guy. I'm a guy who likes purple. You know what that means? Ghosts. And you got like the Haunter comes out. It's like, I'm the most purple thing you'll ever see, you know?
Absolutely. You know, Universes Beyond gets a bad rap, but I think Universes Beyond is bringing us closer to this Yu-Gi-Oh! Future where everyone is just doing a weird character, and it's like, oh, you messed with the wrong sponge because my SpongeBob deck is going to stomp you into the dirt, you know, and then just making puns. I think that could be really fun. It just needs a lot of buy-in to really work. Otherwise, it's just like me being a nerd, like, you know?
That's the thing is, like, I think what it comes down to is if we're in on the bit's hilarious.
Yeah.
Like it is the most fun to think about somebody getting so stoked about SpongeBob, and SpongeBob is like a Muldrotha reskin or something. And you're like, really? Okay, fine. Oh yeah. Well, I'm SpongeBob and you don't know. You don't want to come down a Bikini Bottom. You'll get your ass beat. You know, grab your patties. I got the spatula. What was the spatula 3000 or whatever? One with all the
hydrodynamic spinning. Spatula.
Exactly. Except, but he got his regular old spatula. That's all he needs. That's the Swiftfoot boots or like the Shadow Spear. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I love this idea of getting so into, because like I'm trying to think of a thing that I like on that level besides Magic. Because to me, I'm one of those tragic figures in the sense that I've turned all my favorite hobbies into work. Stand-up comedy was my favorite thing to watch and listen to. Now it's like, well, I'm doing it because I love it, but I also need to be on top of it, so I'm not doing bits or premises that are too regular or whatever. I'm working now, you know what I mean? I'm doing stand-up, I gotta go work. I'm doing, hey, Magic, it's my favorite game, has been since I was 9 years old. Finally get to a point where I'm not like, you know, you get bullied in high school for liking Magic.
Oh yeah.
You come back to it, you leave it, you come back. Now I'm in. I've been in for a decade plus and I love the game, and I'm not, you know, I'm spending too much money on it, that's for sure. But I'm having the most fun. I'm meeting people all over the world and having a great time with it. But now it's like, I'm writing about it professionally. I'm doing a podcast. I've turned it into work again. So I'm thinking, what else do I love that isn't work that I would totally obsess over enough to turn into a deck? And my only answer, I swear to you, is the Saw franchise. And it feels dumb as hell to be like, I'm going to make a Jigsaw deck out of this Commander stuff, because there's just nothing that does it justice, man. It's just, there's nothing that does it justice at all.
Well, I think that's part of the fun, is trying to really force it to fit. You know, you could get Arabella or like that mimic that's Chucky, Billy the Puppet. You know? Yeah, and that could be. And then, you know, you're like, would you like to play a game? You know, I think you find your own fun.
Duskmourne helped. Duskmourne did help. It gave us Let's Play a Game, Saw, and Live or Die. Uh-huh. Those are in the deck. But the question is, who do we get to be the commander, if not just the Celestial Toymaker, who is his own horror villain in the Doctor Who universe, right? So, anyway, I digress. I set that aside. That's, again, I have thought about this idea of what would be the thing that I could turn to and be like, I'll make this a commander deck and really theme it out like you have. And like that, you know, Rick and Morty deck was. And I'm just thinking, man, I got to find another thing. I don't think Saw is that healthy to love as much as I do. I think it's I feel like partly embarrassed to be like, if I rocked up and I'm like, this is my Saw deck. I spent 600 hours figuring it out perfectly before I made the cards analogs for stuff and I put them together. Yeah. It's cool.
You can also do it in the game. You know, if you just have a Worms deck, it's just a matter of finding the right puns, I think, you know, the right character to embody.
Yeah. You're right. It is an attitude thing. You're right. I definitely should. There's going to be cards that support it, but it's definitely going to be like the politics, the deck. And I go like, all right, Spencer, I want to play a game. And then everybody at the table groans. They're like, the answer is, I have an anguished unmaking in my hand. There are many permanents on the battlefield to exile.
Villainous choices.
Yeah, truly. Yeah. You know what? Okay. I'm doing this after we hang up. I think I'm going to put the foot on the gas pedal and just could fly. Sorry, hell Ken. Yeah. I didn't mean to swear.
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you. So, Spencer, you're calling in to Am I the Ballcast, and I have to assume that you're calling because you have a pet peeve in Magic, or maybe a story where you might be the villain.
Yeah, so I kind of have both. I guess my pet peeve is just the way I play Magic. I'm just trying to do a cool thing. Like if I have my Flubs Tarot deck, I'm trying to like flip over a bunch of cards so I can explain to people, oh, this is the Lovers. This is the Lovers reversed. You know, I'm not trying to win. And I think when you're not trying to win, it really frustrates people. And I think if they don't just want to kill you outright for doing that. Also, I think that just kind of makes you a villain at a lot of tables, like not trying to win. Like I totally get why that's frustrating to people, like not finishing and closing games. But like, I think it's just confusing if it's not explicitly frustrating on its own merits. But I just want my deck to do its thing. And if it does, I don't need, like, it usually won't win anyway. But I really just like to play the game and show cool stuff. I don't know. It's just always how I played Magic is like, I think it comes from people pleasing and just wanting people to think I'm cool. And instead of getting good at Magic and showing them my skills, I would rather be like, here's this little thing I've made. You want to see it? Look how neat it is. Almost like I'm drawing like a crayon drawing and showing it to people or something, you know?
Yeah, buddy. I'm right there with you. I want you to know that. I'm trying to put the decks I'm most happy to play against are decks where, hey, I'm doing this thing that shouldn't be done in these colors, or I found this one card that sucks really bad and I wanted it to work well in a deck.
Yes.
So I built this entire deck around it. And you know what? Nothing. So I have a Rassilon. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's from the Doctor Who set. Rassilon, the war president, the Dimir conspire guy who at the beginning of your upkeep exiles the top card of your library and costs you 2 life. And then each non-creature spell you cast has conspire. Mm-hmm. And so you're wondering, okay, there are ways to exile from the top of your deck, but what if you got something in your hand that you want to exile and double with conspire? Well, let's try to put Ice Cauldron in a deck. One of the silliest cards to ever exist. Hey, how about How about Muse Vessel? Has anybody successfully played a Muse Vessel? Me. I have. I had a lot of fun casting Muse Vessel and letting it be relevant for exactly 3 minutes, okay? It was awesome. And so to do something like that, that brings me a lot of joy. And in the right circles, it brings people joy. It's so much fun to play. I've got my ice cauldron in play, and my friend goes, "Wait, seriously?" And I go, mm-hmm. "Yeah." And they're like, "I gotta see this." And that's the most validating and fun part. And we're playing for the same reasons. We're playing to see where this engine can take us. I found out what day is it? I found out a couple days ago that my friend built a Golgari clones deck.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Black, green.
Yeah.
Excellent question. I got the list in my DM somewhere. I looked it over once or twice and I was like, this is bananas. I don't know how this is supposed to work. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Hazel of the Rot Bloom is the or Root Bloom, either way, the new Hazel from Bloomboro is the commander, and mm-hmm. he made that deck, and it Golgari clones. I gotta see it.
And you just, I don't know, online and stuff, especially with social media, I just think like there's a lot of people who I haven't been connected to, at the very least, that like that is their access to the game. And it's really an interesting way. I think it lends itself to like writing and making content, you know,
yeah,
because it's just like exploring these interesting ideas. But the problem with that is it gets into like, then when you're starting to cook, people are like, "Oh, better stomp on you, better stop you down." And it's like, well, that would be valid if I was trying to overrun the game. But really, I'm just trying to be in my corner building my little house of cards, you know? And so, you know, I get targeted a lot and I'm just like, come on, man. But also you can't get mad at someone for trying to win the game, you know, either. That's what's tough is like, I have a hard time knowing like how to take it because it's just different, you know, it's different than what other people do, but that's the general gist. But also I play with a lot of beginners and
interesting
because I teach them how to play. They rightfully go like, "Oh, Spencer's really good. And so we got to gang up on Spencer," right. Especially with Commander. It's like, I've taught three people and they're like, "Okay, let's take him out." So I'm always getting taken out no matter what. And and then if they don't take me out, because I'm like, "Look, I'm not a threat. And then I pull like one card and the game starts turning around. They're like, "You were lying." And I was like, "No,
yeah.
like, you were not like, you've just let me do nothing all game. And finally I got a bomb and apparently that's enough to knock you all down or whatever." But it's not like I was lying. Because here's another thing. I mean, politics, sure. Everybody loves politics, whatever. I don't like politics, maybe because I'm bad at games like Werewolf, you know, but
yeah,
what I do is I give people my most honest advice, even if it's bad for me. Like, so I'll try
again, yeah,
because beginners,
I'm
right?
With you. I'm with you on
so
that.
I just try and help. I'm like, I really, and other people are playing politics and lying and they'll be like, "Oh, kill that. And I'll be like, "I think he's trying to do that so he could do this. Like, I think that's the best thing to kill, even though he's telling you not to." Like, and sometimes I'll be like, "You know, my thing is probably the best thing to kill." Like, I'm really honest. And that throws people off too. Like they get like, you know, politics players get mad because you're kind of stomping on their game. And the people who don't know better are like, "Why are you being so honest? Why are you being so helpful? This is clearly a trick." And it's like, it's not a trick. I just, no. This is what I do. This is how I play.
Spencer, let me tell you something. I dig that so much. I'm with you. I look, as someone who has some, like, I'll politic for sure. But when the conversation circles around who's the threat, and it comes to me, and I genuinely am the threat, I immediately will be like, "Well, yeah, that makes sense. Like, right. Why wouldn't, like, oh, I'm the guy with 70 permanents in play after one-sided board wiping the table." And they're like, "Yeah, I don't know, but I've seen what his deck can do when he's got like that many cards in hand and this many lands." It's like, I get it. But like, if it gets to my turn, I'm going to kill him and then probably you. Mm. So like, look, if you're saving your game, you kill me too. Like, it's, there's no way around it. And I think that that's a fair way to play. But when it comes to like hidden information, if I have something that would make me the threat, but I don't appear as a threat and somebody else definitely does, is like 100% the threat with the information on board versus what I've got going on, I'm going to have to be like, "Look, sure, there are cards in this deck that'll make me the threat. They might be in my hand right now.
Sure.
But with everything we know on the board, that's not me. I'm not the threat.
Yeah.
But there is a strong possibility that I could be the threat. But I am not at the moment. You know what I mean?
I like showing, I mean, this is cheating, but I like showing people with the cards in my hand to be all like, look, if you don't do this, I'm gonna play this and probably win.
Technically nothing in the rules against it, I think. If I remember correctly, you can reveal your hand at any time, but sometimes it's as a cost.
Oh yeah. Big cost.
I don't mind. Sometimes in my play group, if someone's way behind, they'll just be like, can I flip the top card? And we'll be like, sure. And they just like Oracle of Moldiah for that turn. You know, they pop it over, flip the top card of their library and show everybody. Damn it. I needed another land. I'm not going to get it.
Yeah.
So now they know whether or not how hard they can check out for the next turn. But that's the thing is like within groups and stuff, you kind of adapt to that kind of thing. So like your play style of like not wanting to win, but rather to just experience like, hey, I'm doing this thing. It's going to affect the game. I'm kind of like it's like you are this chaotic enchantment.
And that's
a fun way to think about it. I like the idea of like you ever seen players go against like the tower or like zombie outrun zombie format. I forget how it works, but Commander Versus did it a long time ago. It's just this gigantic like 800 card pile of zombie tokens and then like extremely powerful zombie spells. So like you could flip a zombie token and every turn they flip more cards. So every turn they just flip. So it's like, okay, turn one, flip a zombie in play. And okay, turn two, flip two cards. Zombie token, Lord of the Undead's in play. And so, you know, but it's four players against the tower.
That's so cool. I've never heard of that.
It's fun. There's a lot of variants to Commander that like are very fun to explore, but then there's something so beautiful about the meat and potatoes for free for all 100 card singleton decks. Let's go, you know. But that said, I think that if you like to present yourself as like, hey, I'm here to kind of be like a chaotic enchantment that if you really need to remove me, then go for it. But in the end, like here's my beautiful cards. Don't they look nice?
That's, I mean, and if you think about it, for me at least, it's like I play with a lot of beginners, and then I started going on Magic content shows, including with Brian Kibler, and so like, I've gone from like absolute like first gear to like highly tuned Formula Run racers, and it's a big shift, you know, and going back and forth and then, you know, trying to uptune my decks and then playing beginners and they don't know what they're doing so much. And, you know, it's really been rough. And, you know, I have that Zedru deck, which is like a chaos deck, which, you know, you can't get mad when people are like, oh, I'm just going to kill you. So I don't have to think so hard. You know?
I regain some agency here. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I don't have to think through a knowledge pool loop.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes like I just put cards in because I think they're fun cards, but then you don't think about it so much. Like I had a perplexing Chimera in that deck.
Yeah.
And I took it out because like what I do when I play it is I just hold on to it until like something really crazy comes out. But when you give it to someone else, suddenly they're like thinking about everything as a super viable option. And also they're thinking about it in terms of, and then they'll have my perplexing, which is also just not how I think about it. Again, I think a dual commander that comes up less, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I took that out and there's cards like that, that it's just like, oh, I mean, I thought this would be kind of crazy, but instead it's game breakingly unfun.
That's the thing about some Magic designs are kind of like, if you think of Magic as jazz,
sure.
Some designs
it's about
are
the
just
cards you don't play.
Hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah, yeah. Baby. Snaps.
Sorry.
God damn it. No, nailed it. Perfect. It is about the cards you don't play. Like, it's literally Perplexing Chimera. Straight up, like, literally, you don't play it. And why? Because it's that niche jazz with, like, a trained ear or, like, an experience. Like, oh, I know jazz history. You go, that's a fun callback or, like, what an interesting way to do this. This would go in my binder of historical Magic cards that make me think, what an innovation, right? Mm-hmm. Versus like the stuff that's going to make you snap your fingers and tap your toes. You got Cradle of Behemoth or like even Gigantosaurus or whatever.
Yeah.
Like You know, it's yeah. it's simpler, but it's still like more popular and easy to get. You know, that's what I'm saying. I like the kind of math jazz magic. That's mm-hmm. where I'm at. And so to hear about the way you like to play games where you're like, I kind of just build my thing and see how it all interacts. That's fun to me. But yeah. as someone who plays those decks as well, man, I get it when people don't like what I'm doing. It's fine. It happens. What can you do?
Yeah, I have this Riku of Two Reflections deck, and it mostly is just good stuff. Like, it's like, oh, let's just play things twice, have big creatures and stuff. But it usually can never actually win that way, just because I think it's pretty mana intensive and slow. And Riku obviously just eats every, you know, it takes like at least four casts.
Isn't it two to toughness? It's so, yeah, it's impossible to keep that around.
Yeah, but like, so the game, it never wins unless I can either stick a Biovisionary, in which case, like, Biovisionary and any clone spell is you double the Biovisionary and you double the clone spell, and then Biovisionary is like, oh, you know, if you have four copies, I win. And then, or if I have, like, Time Warp, it's like sometimes I can go into a recur Time Warp. But it's like, those are, like, the two cards in the deck that can, like, win the game. Otherwise, it's just like, oh, I have six Hydras and other people just kill them and it's over, you know? Yes. Yeah. It's a lot of fun, but then, you know, I just get sniped out unless I go for like the big turn, and no one likes the big turn, you know,
which
I don't even like,
except I love the big turn. I'm on the other end of this.
Yeah.
We'll come back to Riku in a second, because it reminds me of something I'm dying to talk about, but I love the big turn.
Yeah.
I love seeing the body language change. I love the forecasting. I love when somebody hits a temple bell like two turns before it's supposed to come around to the player who's about to have the big turn. And you can see on their face being like, this changes everything. Or sometimes they're like, oh, well, that I got to rethink my whole plan because I just drew into something. Yeah. And now people are on edge. They're like, what's this going to be? And then all like, and you get to the big turn and you're like, okay, here we go. It's going to be seven straight minutes of like tapping and untapping. And I'm going to play this. And this is into the graveyard. It's out of the graveyard. Little bits of triggers. What's this? Zulaport Cutthroat is on the battlefield with an Aristocrats deck. It's a beautiful thing. And one of my favorite things to do with my old play group back home when we were playing more frequently was one of us would say, I think I have the win, but I don't know. And we'd kind of all just be like, well, we're tapped out, so drop your hand. Let's see it. So we would kind of like work it out with the player who was going to win. So he's like, I'm not sure. And I think that's so it's a more collaborative experience where you kind of feel like I coached through the win, definitely still lost. But I find that so much fun. I love a big turn because it can't just happen with two cards.
Right.
Big turn is rarely two cards.
Right. I agree. And maybe I should amend what I'm saying. Like, what I don't like is when I'm the one taking the big turn, because again, I just like, I get really anxious that I'm like bumming people out. I have a lot of insecurity about a lot of things, and that's one of them, you know? And so like, I don't like taking up the time. I also don't like when people are in the tank, you know, just thinking and thinking, like if they're going off, sure. But like you're saying, it's like when someone is like, I think I have it, and they're trying, and you're trying to advise them and stuff. It's like, that's them like really doing their deck at the top of its level and making cool stuff happen. And I'm here for that. I want to enable that. I want them to let it happen. I want to celebrate their deck and the way they like to play, you know? So I really do like that. I just like, I don't like being the person who's like, okay, wait for me. Especially if I don't have the win, it's just like, I have to grind through all this value, but at the same time, it's like, I feel so sorry. I'm apologizing constantly, you know?
I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been there, but I mean, I'll say this. We're all sitting down to play the same game. You're playing your part of it. It's totally fair to take the time you need to get through a thing. And I know that that's not necessarily something that, like, you know, you've lived your life. You know how you are. You've probably heard this a million times. You're worth the time that we spend together. And that's what's important to playing the game is like, you're hanging out with people, you're having a good time. And even if you're spending all this time on a turn, even if I'm not stoked on the turn, I'm stoked we're playing, you know, I might chirp you. I might go like, hey, maybe we get another game in after this win. I think you got it. You know what I mean? Like that might happen. But I think that there's more to it. And I hope that at some point you kind of get to relax through a turn. You get to take a big turn and enjoy it the way that I fucking love it. Okay, sorry, yeah. Ken. I'm all about it. It's fun. I did want to talk about Riku real quick because my buddy Chris, who I clown on all the time. Love you, Chris. Don't know if he listens to the podcast. He's one of the guys from my OG playgroup. And we all got together in 2014. Back then, he had picked up a Riku of Two Reflections saying, I'm going to build this commander. He spent years on Architect, or at the time, Tapped Out.
Yeah.
Putting together this deck, writing primers for a deck he had yet to build, worked and tweaked years. It wasn't until earlier this year, 2024, it wasn't until I think it was like March 2024, he showed up with, at this point, he had sold his collection. You know, sometimes we'll borrow decks that I have because I've got too many.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a whole stack of proxies. He's like, I finished Riku and it's ready. And we sit down to play it. And the moment he cast it, his brother killed Riku. And it was the funniest thing I have ever experienced. He's literally written 6 or 7 separate primers on the deck he had yet to play and had just been theory crafting. And I think, again, as much as I make fun of him for stuff like this, because I do make fun of him for this, it is so fun that he is so captivated by this one commander and wants it to be just right before bringing it out and making it happen. And then the game has so far advanced beyond Riku really being all that viable.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's so wild.
That's a big part of it for me, too, is like I think my head is still stuck in like early Commander, and it's just so different now, you know, and it's hard for me to wrap my brain around that.
I remember somebody in the early days of that group having a Damia deck of stone, like soul something or whatever.
Yeah.
A Damia deck where it's a Sultai commander who says you at the end step, you discard your
Up to 7.
You draw back up to 7 at your upkeep. You skip your draw step. That's it. You skip your draw step. You draw back up to 7 every turn.
Yeah.
And it's a 7 drop commander. 4/4 death touch. 7 drop. Beginning of your turn, you draw up to 7. It doesn't matter. You could be at 0, that's draw 7. You could be at 2, that's 5. 6, you go up to 7. If you're at 7 already, you don't get a new card. That sucks.
Yeah.
But the rest of it is like you have this 7 drop commander that was the boogeyman of our playgroup.
Uh-huh.
She was in charge back then. It was nuts to watch this deck just do its thing because it would dump its hand. And then what was it? Dominaria. It was like 10 years ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Muldrotha comes out. Muldrotha doesn't make you skip your draw step. It's 6 mana instead for 6/6 instead of 4/4. And your graveyard's basically your hand now. You can play lands, all permanent spells from your graveyard. You get to cast one for each type. That's pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, extra hand. We solved Sultai. And that was back in Dominaria, which I'm trying to get a look at the year at the bottom there. That would have been 2018.
Mm-hmm.
2018 for Dominaria. So
yeah, I've wanted Magic's to build a Muldrotha.
Wild.
Yeah.
Me too.
That's just the art's great too. Muldrotha, it's almost too many options. It's like, well, any card can be played. So what do you put in the deck? You know,
Muldrotha is one of those commanders that's perfect for a theme deck, but will get you targeted like it's the competitive deck it once was.
Right. What do you call it? Well, the Sultai is one of my favorite color combos. So yeah, it's just nice to have any Sultai deck.
I haven't had a Sultai deck in a minute, actually. I keep looking at Volrath the Shapestealer like, this is going to be the one. I really like that one.
I got, like, in the Mystery Booster 2, I got this thing that, like, gives all snakes and nagas and serpents, like, poisonous. And I was like, I just want to make that. Just, like, a Sultai snake kind of poison deck could be fun. Because I really like snakes. Snakes are one of my, especially from Kamigawa, are, like, one of my favorite creature types. And so just like a Kamigawa focused like snake deck could be a lot of fun.
Did you ever have a Hapatra deck?
No.
Were you ever one of those guys? Hapatra, Vizier of Poison. She's a Golgari. So it's for one black green, you get a your legendary creature who, when it deals damage to a player, you put a -1/-1 counter on target creature. And when you do, when you put a -1/-1 on a creature, you create a 1/1 death touching snake. And so when Hapatra came out, it was like, oh boy, here we go. The -1/-1 de facto commander forever is out here. And then, oopsie, we got ourselves a Scorpion God, and now we want a Jund one to play them both. But Hapatra, I had a Hapatra deck. I took it apart literally a month ago because I hadn't played it in very long. And I really loved building that deck. It felt like the perfect balance of, like, it's telling you what to do, but it also felt creative.
Yeah.
And I quite like that. So I think Hapatra's a really, really neat commander if you're thinking dipping in there.
It's got a lot of gas, but like you say, like, you can go in a lot of different directions and still kind of like do the thing for sure, which is like a cool thing. This isn't commander, but this one deck that maybe gets a little bit into what we're talking about. There's this card called Nakatal War Pride.
Yeah, I love that card.
Yeah, and so for the audience, it copies itself for every like blocker the opponent has, and also it has to be blocked by one creature if it can. And so I just like, the thing is, the copies it makes can also copy themselves, but you need a lot of things for that to happen. You need multiple combat steps, but the thing is, the tokens don't have haste. They just come in attacking. So you need to give the tokens haste, and then you need to give the opponent blockers. Ideally blockers that can survive being blocked once by Nakatal Warpride. So I had this deck that like, it had Forbidden Orchard or whatever to give the opponent like spirit tokens. It gave your guys haste and trample. And I think Breath of Fury was the main one I want to do, because as long as you connect with one. And then I had that deck on Magic Online.
Oh my God, did you crash the program? Jesus.
No, because everyone would just forfeit once they saw me getting close. And so that's like a similar thing where it's like, I want to do the thing that my deck is supposed to do. But the second I start connecting, the other thing it would do is people would always miss block, because you have to block exactly one creature.
Exactly.
Would mess them up over and over and over, and then they would just get frustrated that they weren't blocking right and quit. Like,
well, we veered off course considerably.
I'm so sorry. Yeah.
But this was so much fun. It's been nice catching up, man. I'm really happy you're playing more Magic, and you check out Spencer on Commander at Home. Spencer, where else can people find you? What would you like them to point their attention to?
I guess the big one, well, I don't know. I feel guilty even plugging it, because if you'd like to support me, if you just want to give me money out of the goodness of your heart, check out patreon.com/thesixler. I have some stuff over there, but honestly, it's just for people who like me to give me money. I made some D&D content, and then you can check out that, but I haven't made it in a long time. So, you know, you can pay until you think I've paid enough for this, and then, you know, clock out. That's fine. But I'm at the Sixler at Blue Sky. I'm at the Sixler everywhere. You know, Threads, et cetera, Instagram, all of it, you know, just check me out, or don't, you know, it's all good. I've also been on Tolarian Community College a couple times, but yeah, Commander at Home, but yeah, you know, anything. And I have a podcast that happens, where I just kind of randomly, rant about various things. And we've also been doing a deep dive into anime with like a sub podcast that will probably spin off called Anime Binge Club. We're going through Neon Genesis Evangelion. It's a lot of fun. I read a book called Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents. It's about psychology and stuff. Okay. And I've been mapping it onto this series. It's like really interesting to analyze this weird anime from this like weird pseudo psychological lens. So it's a lot of fun. Check me out.
I can dig it. That's very fun.
If you enjoy me. Yeah,
that happens, and it might be, you might be branching out into Anime Binge Club on its own, is what you said. It's it's not done yet, but it's coming.
Right now, it lives on the That Happens feed as like a sub bonus podcast. But you know, we'll probably spin it off.
By the time this comes out, it's probably already spun off, I think. Very likely.
Yeah.
Well, make sure to follow Spencer. Make sure to listen to That Happens and Anime Binge Club. Check him out on all the channels he's on. Make sure to follow. Thank you so much for joining us today, Spencer. We're going to get back in the booth and talk to Morgan and find out whether or not you were the Bolas. What a delightful chat with an old pal, Spencer Crittenden. Thank you so much for calling in. It means a lot, buddy. It means a lot. I've been, so full disclosure, I've been a fan of Spencer's entire vibe since he joined Harmontown, and the stuff he's been able to accomplish since just kind of being part of the audience and then going on to the show and becoming the DM and all that stuff. It's really great. And I really appreciate that he put himself out there. Spencer, I really, really enjoyed this chat. Thank you so much for calling in. I can't wait to hang out again. And till next time, buddy. I'm very excited. Spencer Crittenden. What a fun guy. I bought a Flubs the day after we talked about it. It's on my desk. It's been on my desk since. He sent me the list with all the tarot cards. And I'm going to ask him if he's cool with it. But I think I'm going to put a link to the document or ask him if he's got it posted somewhere that I can refer to. So shout out to Spencer. Thank you so much for calling in. Before we get into the voting point system and the question, I did neglect to mention that while we are sponsored by cardsphere.com, we have a referral link. And I don't know if I've been hitting that hard enough in the last couple episodes at the very least, but we have it in the description of every episode. Please use our referral link to sign up for cardsphere.com. It helps us a lot. So remember, Cardsphere, get your cards here, baby. Morgan Sanchez, remind everybody at home how the voting breaks down.
The new reality of the voting system is this. My vote counts for one, and Mike's counts for two.
Damn.
That's all that's I got to say about that.
Damn.
That's it.
That's it. All right. Okay, so we're not ready to vote just yet. Let's get into the subject. What is Spencer
asking? We could vote before we talk about it. What if we switched it up? I mean, because it's not like we don't know what. Let's pretend we're not from the future past, and like let's do it ahead of time. Like, let's cheat. Why not?
I'm gonna be real. I don't really quite understand what Spencer's question was. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how to formulate it other than
you didn't hear it yet. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't hear it yet. I just had the conversation with him. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and vote preemptively after you vote preemptively. So what is your vote? Yeah, see? Not easy.
Yeah, see, this is hard. This is hard. It's weird when it's like harder to cheat than to do the real thing. Uh-huh. I'm going to say, you know, we could do coin flip, and I'm going to say not the Bolas.
Not the Bolas. I'm going to be in agreement with you and say not the Bolas. I also think not the Bolas.
So that means he has got to be the Bolas. That's what this means. that's what the eventual answer will be.
What's he asking? Morgan Sanchez, what is Spencer Crittenden asking us?
So Spencer wants to know, am I the Bolas for disliking when people are a little too in the tank and doing a lot of thinking or saying, like, wait a second for me while I commit to this series of plays?
Interesting. I don't know that I got that. I thought he was more the one in the tank. So
I think he was talking a bit about how, like, I think we're all in the tank a little bit to a certain extent, depending on what our deck is. Sure. But I have like a really interesting story that the details of are fuzzy because the tank was so large, as it were. Right.
Okay.
So In playing with this person the last time I played Commander, there was, and I neglect to remember the Commander because, again, like there was a lot going on, and eventually I just kind of checked out. But and there was also the caveat, this person being a new player. So I think that compounded things like quite a bit. But yeah. I mean, this is very like dig rifle heavy initiative deck with dungeons, with let me look for a thing. Ooh. Let me find some more stuff. These guys, by the way, interact, and this is going to trigger, and this. And so, I mean, it's something that we've all kind of been privy to, I think, in any kind of Commander game.
Sounds like my kind of deck, if I'm being real.
So you can dirtle around and do the thing, but you're doing the thing, right? It's like, okay, so this is going to happen. This is going to be the resolution. Just give me a second to kind of set it up. I think it's great. And this kind of goes into like a question of like knowing your deck well enough, depending on like your play group. If you're a brand new player and you're trying to do this like super crazy, spiky, potentially do a lot deck, maybe don't do it like outside of like a smaller friend group for a little bit. Because what was happening was we again get into the issue of like, these cards all have too many words, right? So things are interacting and triggering, but then, you know, I'm looking over and I'm like, okay, wait, what does that do again? And then they can't explain it because they're like, oh, actually, I don't know. And so that's where you start getting into the whole, not dirtling to dirtle, but just like, nobody knows what's happening. We're all figuring this out at the same time. And
yeah, I see what you're getting at.
If you go, okay, wait a second, let me figure this out. Like, that's your deck, girl. You maybe should have played this a couple times and know. You need to be able to tell me what your deck is doing right now. If it's going to take longer than just, you know, attack block here, trigger a thing, something happens in the end of combat, like, you need to just be able to tell me. I shouldn't be trying to decipher what's going on the other side of the table. And you're like, well, actually, I don't know either. So hang on, let me see. that can turn into like a really frustrating game of like, we're all just learning how to play this deck. And it's miserable, right?
Okay. Well, so personally, I'm a little on the other side of that because I agree. I understand that it can be frustrating if you're sitting down to a game and that's not what you're signing up for. That's not what you're signing up for. Like, you just don't want it. You're not about to have it. Like, that's not it. But for me, I love a machine. I love an engine. I love seeing how all the cards interact with each other. I love picturing what the animation would be if it were on Arena. You know, like, I enjoy seeing, like, mentally picturing the stack appear, you know. It's very satisfying to me to see like all this interaction. It's my style of play. And so when you said maybe only play it with people, you know, I'm going to go ahead and say, I don't have a choice. I got to play it anytime. This is the kind of deck I build. But that's the thing is, this kind of deck building behooves me to goldfish like a crazy person. Like, if I have a small opening or a break at work, I have a deck in hand shuffling up. I'll play a couple hands of that. If I'm, you know, just killing time waiting for my girlfriend to get back to something before we go out at night, I'm on my computer goldfishing on Archidact. If it's late at night and I don't want to watch something on TV and my girlfriend just wants to play Stardew Valley and we just want to hang out on the couch, I'm playtesting something while we listen to a podcast together. Like, I love, love, love putting together a deck and tinkering and goldfishing and knowing exactly how it works. So when it comes down to playing a deck that has a lot of moving parts like this, playing it this way that you've described it sounds like my nightmare, but I've also been the excited person on the other side of the table going, do you give me permission to track your triggers and like be on top of this? I would love nothing more than to be a bit of a referee here. Like, I don't mind it. In fact, I quite like it. If whatever keeps me engaged in the game, not on my turns, you know, like, I'm in. I just really, really like how all this works together. It's so fun. But I can see the point of when someone's like, hold on, wait a second, let me just, I gotta figure this out. And they take a really long time. Yeah, that can be a little, that can ruin momentum. That can stall things out a little bit. That's not great. But again, it comes down to preference. Like most of the podcast, like most of the column, it's just like, it's about your personal preference and communicating that, right? And I don't know. To me, just it isn't so bad until it is bad.
I think it's one of those things where like maybe the other, there's nuance. And as an esteemed colleague would say,
don't. Do it. You set it up already.
There's context involved in making this decision, right? And so I guess for me, like you could come back with a bunch of different questions about like what is appropriate. There is a right or wrong answer, regardless of what you think, Mike. And everybody else is shouting at you too about saying like it's not all
they're just so mad nuance at me
and your preference. There is a right answer, and the right answer is stop playtesting with strangers with your crazy complex deck that has a billion triggers every single freaking phase and has 80 layers of like judge questions built into it. I think that's the correct answer is I don't do that.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page where like the thing is some people don't have the choice, right? They go to their LGS or maybe they're people who travel for work and just like that's how they unwind is they find a new LGS and they try to play at the Commander Night or something, you know, like they don't have a choice but to play this deck with strangers. But at the same time, I think the important piece is make sure you goldfish your deck. Like, play it on your own, whether it's online on a playtester or with your deck on a table or whatever. Just goldfish your deck so you know what it does. Like, I think that there are some corner cases that won't come up until you're actually playing, and that's normal considering you're going to be adding three new decks that do completely different things to the board and are different things to track. It's an incredibly complex game, but how do you reduce the complexity? Understanding. You need to know what's up, and you just have to train yourself in your deck. What a wild way to put it. You have to train yourself to play your deck.
Some of it, I think, also maybe comes down to like ego, too. I think there's a lot of players who maybe think that like, you can just hand me any deck and I'll figure it out and that kind of thing. And that, and that's also where you potentially run into the situation and where it's also kind of annoying. If you're saying you can figure it out, you better figure it out pretty quick. Maybe I just have like a not tolerance for the non like new player outside of this context. But like, I find it very hard to believe that people don't know if their decks are like complex or not, or they're not going to be complex or not to like a stranger. I mean, I'm pretty dense. I don't get a lot of stuff. So that my bar is very low. But imagine like anybody else where it's like somebody like you, Mike, who is like, you could probably figure it out. Like if you're having trouble doing this, then maybe that wasn't the right decision for your opponent to make. Right.
I'd say there's like a handful of pilots that I would entrust like a deck that sight unseen that they'll play the best that they can. You know, and they're all like high level players or high visibility players like Rachel Weeks or Comedian or Olivia Gobert Hicks, for example. These guys like hand them a deck. I have no doubt that they'll just like sight unseen, shuffle up, draw seven cards. The commander is all you got. And you find out you've got like four lands in your opener. Like, let's go. Let's see them do what they're going to do. But I will say in defense of this new player playing this initiative dungeon deck, It's totally possible. Like, I'm assuming that it's something like Hama Pashar, Ruin Seeker, who, you know, room abilities of dungeons you own trigger an additional time. Or, you know, a three-color dungeon deck like Sephiris, who says when you complete a dungeon, you reanimate a creature. And whenever a creature card goes to your graveyard, you venture forth into the dungeon. That kind of deck, it kind of puts itself together. In a sense, because like if you go to Scryfall and you type in initiative or dungeon, like or enter the venture to the dungeon, you know, like I think that that kind of deck can be incredibly complex while also not being difficult to put together, for example. Whereas like if somebody's trying to put together, you know, an aristocrat strategy, you got to be a little bit more intentional about what you're picking over other stuff. Like, it's one thing to have not all the, like, the drain effects on board and then a sack outlet or something, but to know how your deck does it, you can't just, like, put together an aristocrats deck just like that. You have to have some know-how. It's not like you're guided by, like, a specific line of text. It's not like a mutate deck, which is its own can of worms, right? Like, I want to make a mutate deck in these colors. Well, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to type mutate into Scryfall and set my commander color identity into the search. And lo and behold, I've got like 18 mutate cards. That's already like a solid chunk of the deck. And then you have to like go from there. There's enough initiative and dungeon cards that you could put together a deck just like that without even thinking about it. And so it does end up being this thing where they thought like, it's just a whatever deck. And then they come over and they're like, okay, I have to get in the tank. I don't quite know. Maybe I'm overwhelmed. But I do feel like, again, to your point of the ego, it's difficult to admit it. And I think that if you call...
Is it, though? I mean, that's part of it, right? But, like, is it...
Morgan, it's difficult to admit it So it's difficult to admit because it's an embarrassing feeling to sit down with a deck and you're like, yes, I'm new, but I put together this deck. I'm really proud of myself. And then you finally have it out and about and you don't know how to get your reins on it. You don't know how to control your deck again. It's like your dog is pulling on its leash and you're about to trip. Like... It's embarrassing to admit you don't have a handle on your deck. Like it can be. So like people saying like, hey, I'm not quite sure or I don't know is not easy for a lot of people, especially. And look, I'm gonna be real. I spent my entire life just having zero shame when it comes to performing. Like I've been a performer since I was a child. I've been telling jokes on a stage since I was a kid. I've only started doing stand-up comedy professionally since like I turned 19 or 20 or whatever. And so for the last 15 years, I've been a stand-up comedian for a long time. But socially, I'm quite adept. I know people. I can read people. I'm a good listener. All this stuff. I'm really good with social stuff. But that can't be said for a lot of Magic players. And I know it's going to sound like a dig. I know it can feel like a bit of a dig. If you feel offended by this, I apologize. But a lot of Magic players can be honest with themselves and say that socially speaking, they're not so good at vocalizing their emotions or in properly interpreting the emotions of others, right? So with that said, like, that's therein lies the success of the column, really, because a lot of people write in saying, like, what do I do about this? And the answer is always talk to your playgroup, have a frank discussion with them, be open, honest, and ready to kind of move with wherever their opinion goes. Share what you're feeling, but be ready to reciprocate that listening to them. And that's the important piece here, is that we're saying this is a new player showing up and they're like, I'm going to be in the tank. I don't quite know what this is. It's hard for, like, if the environment isn't created for them to be vulnerable in that way, they're not likely to open up that way. So them saying, like, actually, I don't know, might have been like a breaking point, and any moment of like some sort of comfort could have gone a long way to say, like, hey, that happens, but like, let's take a look at your board together. And then you've got this new level of like, okay, I can be a little bit more open. What's the worst that can happen? You catastrophize, being like, they'll kick me out if I don't understand my deck. If I admit this, they're going to make me like, I'll never play here again. My career in Magic is over, you know, versus it being like, hey man, I don't know. You ever been to a skate park and watched, like, my favorite thing growing up when I was like hanging out with my friends at a skate park was seeing like this new kid show up, get on his skateboard, bail almost immediately, then look around at other people looking at him as if like they're about to laugh at him. And then somebody goes like, it's your first fall, dude. Hell yeah. You're going to do that a lot. It's normal. And then that kid, huge smile, just starts going again. You know what I mean? That's kind of like what I feel like this story reminded me of, and how I think we can learn to approach, you know, not necessarily new players, because we're always learning, right? But I think we can definitely come at it from a perspective of like, let's make this a safe space for people to chime in.
Yeah, you know? I think in the end, like, no matter what, that's like the goal of the Kolom, yeah, and the podcast, is that there's a right or wrong answer, but there is also nuance. And like, in the end, like, really, if you're writing into Mike and being like, dude, did I like totally screw this up and that kind of thing, like, mm-hmm, just revert back to the, like, are you being like a good human to another person? We all get irritated and annoyed by dumb stuff. I'm like the queen of that. Okay. Like, I'm not the best player in the world. So, I mean, you know, for me, it's almost like a self fault of being like, well, you don't know your deck. What the heck are you doing? But yeah, let's open up and have a safe space to communicate and say, like, you know, what? Yeah. Yeah, maybe I don't, but I think this is really cool. And so, I mean, if you have something to say about it, like, you know, let's talk about it and work through, you know, combat or whatever it may be, like, phase together, because this always trips me up. Like, something crazy is always happening. Yeah. So, I mean, just default to that, I think, is really the moral of the story here. When you're kind of feeling that way and a little persnickety about it, just think about, you know, yeah, like, and it's totally fine, right? Like, go find another playgroup, you know, maybe come back next week. Like, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, exactly. And it is totally valid to be on the other side of that and being a little annoyed that you have to experience it. You don't, like, I don't know, if you don't always want to be the one to have to like lift somebody up, you know, you got to be able to have that space for yourself to just like enjoy what you want to enjoy. And if some behaviors persist, then you'll kind of get pushed away. Just make sure you keep the time for yourself too. That's valid too. Like, if you're somebody who hates when a player is in the tank for so long, hey, totally fair. I can't get mad at you for that, but it's a complicated game. I don't feel mad either way at the game or the people playing it, just the government. That said, maybe that's why people getting stickers of our logo is a good thing. This is exactly it. Show people that you are considerate of their time and their experience, and that you're an open person. That's kind of what I want for this podcast and the column in general, is that like, you come away from it knowing that the conflict, like, confrontation isn't always a bad word. You can confront your own feelings. You can confront the feelings of others. You confront the situation. It's how you're confronting it that matters the most. And I think that if anything, you're, you know, I would hope that those of you who are out there with bolus stickers or like who listen to the podcast are just like hoping to listen to conversations about Magic and thinking, is this going to make me a better Magic player or a person? And I hope so. Like, that's all it is. I want to get you thinking about that. It's important, especially because at a certain point, you get to a moment where you realize, like, not everybody's worthy of your kindness. But, you know, if you can approach many other people with kindness, you should give it to them. Tell them what's up. I talked a lot. I do that too much. This is a long, long episode. That's going to be it for us. You can check us out online at Am I the Bowlcast on Blue Sky. I am migrating off of Twitter. I'm just trying to keep it on so that I can port some relationships I have on there elsewhere, like some longtime friends that I've been DMing on Twitter, just waiting for them to move over to Blue Sky before hopping off. So don't follow us on Twitter. If you do already,
don't expect much.
Unfollow. But I'm not going to be on there much. It's just to say hey to some friends on DM, and then Blue Sky is where it's at. So at Mike Carrozza, MikeCarrozza, and Am I the Bowlcast, on Blue Sky. We have our YouTube page. Please subscribe to that. That actually helps a ton. Every now and then I'll get a bunch of notifications of people subscribing, and it's really nice to see it growing despite it just literally being the audio on our logo. Keep an eye on it because there's a chance that maybe there's some stuff coming. We'll see. Morgan, where can people find you? What do you want them checking out?
I'm on Twitter and Blue Sky now at Indigo Gentleman. So you can find me there. And I just kind of poop post and lurk. Yeah. So.
Hell yeah. And of course, don't forget to please, 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 if you're at MagicCon Chicago, come meet us at the meet and greet Sunday morning, yes. 10:30 in Creator Central. We'll be excited to see you. It is really nice to be invited as a featured creator. And I feel touched, and I'm also just kind of like nervous and excited. And I'm hoping people come. I understand that Sunday's the day to sleep in a little bit. But if you're coming to the con early anyway, make sure to stop by and say hey. I think that does it. Cardsphere, get your cards here. Check out the referral link in the notes. Do we have anything else, Morgan? Or can we scoot the day?
I think the day is ready to be scooted.
All right, we're about to scoot. Hit it, Ken. Love you, buddy. Bye-bye.